You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Today, we are at the Giro d'Italia.
Cozze, cittere, cozze, cozze, vicine. Non spigudeci ancora, non spigudeci ancora. Cozze, cittere, cozze, cozze, vicine. Non spigudeci ancora, se non mangiano le femmine.
After a start like that and the average of just strong riders, and I'm really happy for Sagan. He really deserved it. The Giro deserves it. Cycling deserves it.
Well, Daniele Fribarincini, on our final day at the Giro d'Italia, it was other people's final day at the Giro d'Italia today as well, some of whom woke up not knowing it would be their final day at the Giro d'Italia. But we opened tonight's show with Max Chiandri, sports director at Movistar, talking about the amazing win, and we'll talk about this a lot, by Peter Sagan. It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
One of the great Sagan victories. Sagan's greatest victory. We'll talk about that later, won't we?
We will. But his victory, and really this day at the Giro, overshadowed by the news that we all woke up to or learned over breakfast, that the COVID test carried out on the rest day produced quite a number of positives, including two riders and two very high-profile riders, Stephen Kruijswijk at Jumbo-Visma, Michael Matthews at Team Sunweb. There were four members of staff at Mitchelton Scott as well. They lost Simon Yates, of course, the other day, who was the first rider to test positive for COVID.
When was the last time a team pulled out of the Tour de France? Was it Festina?
No, I mean 2006. Teams did,
correct.
Did they
correct.
Not
You're
disappear
right.
in 2006?
They did. Well, some teams, Liberty Scura, didn't have enough riders to field a team. Did any other? I don't think any other whole teams pulled out during the race.
I think you could be right, Daniel. There were other staff members who tested positive for COVID from AG2R and Team Ineos. So quite a number of positive tests from the 571 tests carried out. But it meant that Mitchelton Scott withdrew from the race and Team Jumbo-Visma withdrew from the race, having travelled to the start of the race today and appeared to be ready to start. That was in Lanciano, and then made a late decision to not start. And we only really learned of this, didn't we, as the riders wheeled down at the start, and we realised there had been no Jumbo-Visma. A few of you, well, you, Daniel, hadn't seen Sunweb, but they had appeared quite late. They were all quite late to the start. But Jumbo-Visma, Adi Engels, their sports director, marched past us on his way to the start to obviously explain to RCS that they weren't going to take the start. But there was quite a surreal atmosphere, wasn't there?
There was, Rich. You know, one thing that wasn't surreal, if ever you're feeling as though, you know, you've lost your bearings at the Giro d'Italia, you're lacking reference points, one thing always remains the same. What is that?
Gianni Savio.
Gianni Savio, the modulo for today's stage. First stage after the rest day.
Yes, 7-1. 7-1, seven are the riders that must enter in the breakaway. Because to be in a breakaway, and we were for seven stage.
I'll ask you in a minute what happened on the stage where you weren't.
Yes, but this is not possible all the stage. I think that is important that all the riders must be very, very, very attentive. And one, Jonathan Restrepo, for the sprint.
The bomber.
In the finish, the bomber, but we hope the bomber. We don't know.
How is Restrepo? Because the other day, when he was the bomber, it didn't work so well. How is his form?
He was one day 11, and there are other sprinters stronger than Jonathan, but he's a good rider, he's a serious rider. He was in breakaway, so today he is our sprinter.
The bomber.
Sold us a pup today, did he not, Gianni?
Well, the bomber, Restrepo, he did. I mean, Gianni, I don't know whether Gianni was trying to throw us off the scent, but he said that his whole team, seven riders, has to get into the breakaway, except the bomber, Restrepo, and the absolute opposite happened.
I think maybe we misunderstood the tactics, or maybe his team misunderstood the tactics. But that was Gianni Savio. We're going to talk in the first part about the COVID test, what it means for the race. We're going to hear from Adi Engels from Jumbo-Visma. A very, you know, kind of shocked-looking Adi Engels. One of the questions he was asked, actually, was whether the decision was made in Holland by team management or here on the race, and he said it was a combination of the both. It was done in consultation, but really he looked kind of shell-shocked, Adi Engels. Luke Roberts we'll hear from as well, from Team Sunweb, the sports director there. You know, a terrible day for them in the sense that they lost Michael Matthews and there's this uncertainty over them now, but a good day for them in the race, weirdly. It was a thrilling stage, and we will talk about the stage too. We'll also hear from Chad Haga from Sunweb and Max Chiandri from Movistar, and we'll hear also from Ben Swift and Brandon McNulty later on. He rode extremely well, so did Ben Swift today. But we normally do the tale of the tapa at this point, but we're going to actually hand over that responsibility to one of our audio diarists, James Knox, who sent us in his report from today's stage, and it was so comprehensive, and there was so much in there. I watched the stage very, very closely.
It was almost as though he'd ridden the stage.
It was almost as though he was there and had a sort of, you know, a perfect vantage point. But yeah, very comprehensive from James. So we're just going to play that. He's going to do the tale of the tap. It might even be challenging Lionel Burney for this role with this comprehensive tale of the tapa.
Wow, that was some day. Woke up to the news that Mitchelton had gone. They were in the same hotel as us, and yeah, they'd left the race before I'd even woken up. So yeah, started the day off with a pretty mixed events. We had our results back after I'd fallen asleep, so I woke up that we were all negative, at least. But you know, questions starting to be asked about whether other people will be going positive in by the time of the next day and everything else that's going on. Then we get to the start. Obviously a lot of gossip, a lot of chat, pinging off messages here and there to see what other guys are saying. And then, yeah, on the start line, I'm not sure who it was in our team, but someone radioed through a lot of jumbo on here. Every single rider looking around, a lot of jumbo didn't take the start. But from there, yeah, I think we raced it like it was the last day of the Giro. That's the way it's going to be now. There's a lot of, we'll see, but tomorrow's probably going to be more straightforward, of course. But a lot of talk, a lot of gossip. I was absolutely confident at the start of this Giro that we'd get to Milan, but huge, huge questions starting to be raised now. But yeah, the racing was all out. Big, big mess to get in the breakaway. Looked like the breakaway had been established, and we hit the first climbs of the day. Exploded again. UAE setting a pace, then Bora attacking, then following. I was in a good move of 20 guys at one point, sat perfectly in the wheels, and then Ghana and Sagan just blew it apart, pushed on. Some guys clipped across on the next climb, starting to feel a bit on the limit there. All our boys doing best to stay in front, protect Joao. But yeah, it was messy, 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 messy. We're all just starting to pat ourselves on the back. 10 guys ahead, 5 guys going across. No one really of a threat to us. And then FDJ just, yeah, balls to the wall for 20k to try and bring it back. Got it down to less than 30 seconds. But Pagana in front, they just turned it on a bit more. Pop guys from the breakaway, which on a flat straight road is not easy. So they must have been absolutely flying, and yeah, they destroyed not destroy them, but FDJ gave up eventually. The entire bunch stopped for a nice nature break, got the feed bags because we couldn't get them because we're going 65k an hour through the feed zone. Stopped at the cars, had a little refuel, had a little quick chat, everyone laughing about how that was, and then UAE started pulling straight away. So before we knew it, we were to the hard final 50k or so of the race, and yeah, it was just full gas racing. I hope the TV coverage showed that, because yeah, the first climb was not too bad, but yeah, these, it's big stress to be in front for the bottom of the climb was hard, big fight over the top for the descent, starting to get wet roads, and then NTT did a big job for the next climb, took it on, rode a real tough pace, blew the race apart. Actually, I think there was only like 40 guys left at that point, with still 40k to go. They did what they could. Presumably Pozzo Vivo wanted a hard race, but in front with numbers was us. Almeida and me, Honoré, Masnada, Seri around him. We did our best to stay around him. Tacks are flying off, but yeah, Bilbao got away on the descent, I think. I was a little bit behind. These wet descents were pretty sketchy, and I was dropping wheels. But yeah, then we had to, me, Seri, Honoré, pulled, did what we could to limit losses. Didn't let Bilbao get too far away. I heard he was close to getting across the Sagan. And then, yeah, pushed on, tried to set a pace into that final climb, and yeah, Joao, pink jersey, took it on, had to do what he had to do, attacked, took across a elite group of top guys. From there, obviously, Fuglsang punctured on the descent, and they got back across to Bilbao, and I think we can all stand here and say that that was some ride by Sagan today. Obviously, he's one of the world's best riders, best rider of his generation, just about. And that was, yeah, that was something special. I think the way we rode behind and he had to drive the brakes, stay in front, stay ahead of an absolutely rampaging peloton behind. So, yeah, not easy. What a spectacle. I was in a group ahead of Fuglsang, I saw Felline pull on the side of the road to give his bike to Fuglsang, and then Fuglsang was chasing my group, got caught to my group, and that's how I finished on the line, a minute or two back. But most important thing was, you know, we're racing to keep the ping now, really giving everything we can, and you know, I think we did a really good job. We were all buzzing on the bus afterwards. Everyone gave their all, controlled like a real GC team. We didn't come with this ambition, but we're here now, and laying it on the line.
Just to come in off the back of James, of course, rides for De Koninck Quickstep. They successfully defended the pink jersey today. I mean, Peter Sagan was basically on the attack from the start. He rode from the front all day. He featured in every major break and took a very well-deserved win. I mean, Peo Bilbao, strong performance from him. Looked like he was maybe riding into the pink jersey with an attack from that group. Domenico Pozzovivo, his team did a lot of work, as James mentioned, and then he had a puncture, a terrible moment, but came back very strongly and attacked again. Jakob Fuglsang, not so lucky. He punctured, had to take Fabio Fellini's bike, and it looked to be quite a bit too small for him, so he lost a bit of time today. And at the end, I mean, it was a good day in the end for our pink jersey, João Almeida, who easily
won the sprint for third place.
He did attack and won. Yeah, so he took some bonus time at the end. So he now leads. Wilco Kelderman is still in second. Peo Bilbao still in third, but as they went pretty close, and Pozzovivo still in fourth. It was Jakob Fuglsang who lost out today.
How did he lose, Rich? He lost a lot of time.
I'm actually looking at the results here, and they don't appear to be very.
What does it say on general scoreboard?
Well, he lost 130. He came in 138 behind Sagan, which means that he lost just over a minute 15 to Nibali and his other GC rivals.
Fuglsang will look at this for these first 10 days and think that he's been very unlucky. I think, but the couple of minutes he's lost, both with, I suppose you could say, the bad timing in the time trial and then the puncture today. I mean, he must be absolutely kicking himself, mustn't he? Because whenever he's been tested physically, he's looked like the strongest rider in the race, alongside maybe Wilco Kelderman.
Wilco Mann looked phenomenal again today. And we'll hear from Chad Haga in the next part, actually.
I mean, the other thing about Fuglsang is his Achilles heel, we thought, was going to be his team, his very, you know, kind of brittle team. And that is not why he's lost the time so far. I mean, I actually thought they did a pretty good job today with Fellini and the bike change. It looked relatively sort of smooth, and it could have been a whole lot worse, I think.
Though Vlasov and Lopez would have presumably been there. Vlasov might be a better size.
I'm not sure. Superman. So I would have liked to see Jakob Fuglsang finish the stage on Superman's.
You are listening to The Grandest Tour by The Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by iWocker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWocker. If you run a business, find out more at iwocca.co.uk, iwocca.co.uk.
Thank you very much indeed to our headline sponsor, iWocca. If you run a small business and you'd like to know what iWocca can do for you, go to iwocca.co.uk. At iWocca, you will always speak to a person, a human being, and they make decisions very quickly about loans for your business. So go to iwocca.co.uk and see what iWocca can do for you. Daniel, it was a day overshadowed by, dominated by the COVID news and the effect that's had on the race and the kind of cloud that leaves hanging over the race. a lot of people, a lot of writers and sports artists and so on, you know, talking in very uncertain language about whether the race will make it to Milan or not. We've heard from a couple of auto diarists who expressed similar kind of misgivings about that. And yet, at the same time, we're sort of celebrating this phenomenal ride by Peter Sagan, which we will get onto, but we'll deal with the shadow, the cloud that was hanging over the race at the start. And, you know, Jumbo-Visma were there, all set up, bus, cars, and I guess it was quite a surprise. I mean, you know, we're going to hear from Andy Engels in a moment. One of the questions he was asked was whether their decision to pull out the race puts pressure on Sunweb, who also had a rider test positive for COVID. It sounds harsh to say it, but Jumbo-Visma lost their team leader. They lost the reason they were here, Stephen Kruiswijk. Sunweb are in a very difficult position because it's a much harder decision for them because they've got still Wilco Kelderman, who's in very well positioned, looks great. Jai Hindley's up there as well. You know, they don't want to make a decision that might ultimately be the wrong one.
Yeah, and as you say, they've had the pressure applied by their Dutch sort of country cousins. Well, Sunweb is officially a German team now, isn't it? But it very much has Dutch roots. And I think Richard Plugger, the manager of Jumbo-Visma, and Ivan Spekenbrink, the manager of Sunweb, have a decent relationship, and they see eye to eye on most things. But Spekenbrink probably didn't welcome the decision of Jumbo-Visma's decision from a purely selfish point of view and an understandable point of view. We should point out that some people raised the question of why, or were there double standards, because Sunweb, a couple of days ago, they pulled Tijs Benoot out of Gent-Wevelgem because he'd been on a Belgian TV show with Jan Bakkerlant sitting at a table speaking to an interviewer in Jan Bakkerlant, and Jan Bakkerlant subsequently tested positive. So Benoot was then a contact person. So if you apply the same logic, a lot of the Sunweb riders, well, all of the Sunweb riders have obviously been in touch with Matthews. Why were they not pulled from the race? Why was the team not pulled from the race as well? And we sort of suspected, we knew the reason, and it was spelled out to us today that the difference is that one rider testing positive does not necessitate the whole team to withdraw, whereas different standards are applied to the bubble in a one-day race. With a one-day race, you know, there's no question of the team travelling around together for several days and the contact kind of multiplying. So, you know, that was why they stayed in the race. They are going to be repeatedly tested over the next couple of days. We understand. They understand, although the team didn't seem to know exactly, you know, when they were going to be tested. And there was also yesterday, well, over the last few days, there's been talk of what kind of tests are being used. Are they the PCR tests, or are they the sort of quicker tests that have become widely used in Italy, which are actually being credited with a lot of good things in Italy because they're allowing more people to be tested and to know the results more quickly. But I think there's a suggestion that they might be less sensitive.
Yeah, these were the tests that were used at the Giro on the eve of the race, and there was a bit of controversy around that, and I'm not sure if the UCI were totally happy about that, but these are the tests that they are using, and they do, it's like a dipstick, isn't it, a test, which the Italian authorities have been using at airports and so on, and that's an accepted method here. But yeah, I mean, we'll get on to Sunweb in a moment. I mean, Jumbo-Visma, like I say, they were here to support Stephen Kruiswijk, who was still pretty well placed, although he didn't have the best of days on Sunday. It's amazing that the three riders who've tested positive for COVID are all very high-profile riders. And, in, you know, two of them team leaders, two of them favourites for the race. That's remarkable. This is something that we feared at the Tour de France, which didn't come to pass. It has come to pass here. And, well, Jumbo-Visma, as say, Adi Engels, their sports director, cut a pretty forlorn figure, I thought. You know, they were in shock. We had an interview in last night's episode with Jos van Emden, their veteran rider, who was pretty critical of the arrangements here at the Giro, with teams all staying in hotels together.
We were discussing this in the car, weren't we, Rich, and saying that maybe we've not done a good enough job or made it clear enough that this has been the case at every race we've attended this year. There have been, well, the hotels are not closed off for the purposes of the race. They're open. You can book rooms in all of these hotels as and we've been staying with teams at times where it happened at the Tour, it happened to me at the Dauphiné, and some days it's worse or more alarming than on other days. There are some hotels that are taking a more rigorous approach than others. I mean, we heard, didn't we? I think Jos van Emden talks about buffet in Palermo, and you know, we've seen that as well.
We have. Let's hear from Andy Engels.
And at the Giro.
Shall we hear from Andy Engels? This is what he had to say this morning after the team took the decision to withdraw from the Giro.
So, Andy, you guys have decided to take the team out of the Giro, and why?
In our opinion, it's the most responsible decision, with one positive case in the team being Stevie. We've all been close to him, and also looking to what happened to the team of Mitchelton. Started with one case and now another four on the last test round yesterday. So yeah, we've decided to take the most responsible decision, and with the responsible decision in terms of health of our riders and our staff.
You just took this decision in the last hour or so?
Yes.
And can you just tell us, recap a bit last night? I understand you got the news about Stephen very late, is that right, last night?
That was during the night, yes. We were informed about his positive test, and then we were informed also that we were going to be retested this morning. So yeah, of course, then things start rolling, and that's also, it's, I mean, until now it's been of course a roller coaster, and that's also the reason why, yeah, in the end the decision was late, because that's not a decision you just make. No, the decision was made together with management as well. We had a call, yeah, then the decision, we took everything into account, the opinion of riders, opinions of staff, and of course our opinion, management opinion. Then yeah, in the end we came to this decision.
How did RCS react this morning, or Mara Venue?
Well, obviously not
I think
happy.
They can react ourselves.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a big thing, you know, to withdraw from a race anyway, and especially from a race like this. In our opinion, it's also in the interest of the race to do it like this, because riders have been in touch with Stevie closely. If they continue, I think, for 1 week, then that might be another couple of positives. I mean, likely. So I think this is the safest way, not only for us as a team, but I think also for the bunch and for the continuation of the Giro. Well, actually, they took the decision in a good way, because there's also the fear of continuing being that close to somebody who tested positive.
Well, that was Andy Engels. Jumbo Visma are off the race; they're away, and Mitchell and Scott. I mean, I don't think they had a lot of choice. It was clearly spreading within the team with Simon Yates, and then four others. That will be alarming for Team Sunweb. And I asked Chad Haga, one of their riders, about that at the finish.
You're in a really strong position as a team,
yeah,
in the race. Wilco looks like he's flying. You've got Jai Hindley up there as well. So
yeah,
it's a strange situation from that point of view as well, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. To be going so well and then to feel like the wheels are falling off of the peloton with coronavirus is... it's a weird dichotomy to justify those two things.
It's only a day, we're the first day since you learned about the Michael Matthews, but is it going to be hard to kind of keep your focus on the race, not knowing what the next few days might bring?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this pandemic is bigger than a bike race, so trying to perform our best while also keeping our mind that this is a global pandemic, and it's a weird place to be.
And will you guys have daily tests now as well?
I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be more testing in our future, but I don't know.
Chad Haga there, admitting that it's going to be difficult to keep their focus on the job when they will be subject to daily COVID tests. He didn't know that at the time, but that is the case. You know, the uncertainty over their own health. You know, I think from Chad Haga there, I got a real sense of fear about, you know, beyond just the race, and but also, you know, the state of things in the world, and the way that coronavirus, which had seemed to be receding, but as many people told us, there would be this second wave. And we seem to be very much in the, to mix my metaphors, in the eye of the storm of that at the moment.
It's interesting, curious, but maybe not instructive that both Stephen Kryswijk and Simon Yates had kind of underperformed slightly in the days leading up to their positive test. I suspect we'll never know the answer as to whether that was the reason for them not performing as well as we expected.
All three riders, we should say, are reporting as asymptomatic. No, that's not the case with Simon Yates, is it? Because he had the test because he was feeling a bit under the weather. But as far as we know, he's not. His situation, his condition hasn't worsened. Matthews and Kryswijk both apparently completely asymptomatic and only had the test because they were required to have the test on the rest day. So both of them live in Monaco. They've returned to Monaco to isolate for 14 days. Let's hear from Luke Roberts, shall we, the sports director at Team Sunweb, who you spoke to at the finish, Daniel.
First of all, Rich, about today's stage, which was a good one for the Sunweb guys. You know, they've had many good days on this Giro. Hindley and Kelderman, I think everyone can see, everyone is in agreement. They're both in fantastic form. And Sunweb still look like
in a very strong position.
Well, they look like the strongest team in the race. And obviously Michael Matthews would have made them even stronger because he's a guy who can also, you know, he can climb well. And he would have been very valuable. He's gone. But a good day on the road, at least, for Sunweb.
So, Luke, Wilco and Jai look as though they're still absolutely flying. But were there any sort of nervous moments today at all?
Yeah, for sure it was quite a stressful day. I mean, the weather that came in there in the final of what's already a really tough stage. Now we thought it very likely to go to a breakaway, which it did in the end, but not without a really big fight. And hats off to Sagan today. The ride he's done was pretty special. And the peloton fought really hard for it. Coming into those final climbs there, you could see that the guys would... The peloton really falling apart. The guys had a tough day. Our guys showed good legs there. Both Jai and Wilco up there in that diminished front group. And happy to get them safely through today. And look forward to a bit easier day tomorrow maybe.
Just looking at the way the GC guys are riding, it looks as though some are keen to take any opportunity that comes, maybe thinking the race won't go all the way to Milan, whereas some look as though they're thinking that the real action is going to come in the Alps and Dolomites. Your guys look as though they're in the second category at the moment. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think we have our eyes on the last week. There's probably opportunities where we could have gone after the leader's jersey, but in the big picture, we're aiming to go to Milan and we're aiming to go there to win it. So... we don't want to change our focus off that, and we keep working as we plan to here.
Obviously, the day started with the bad news that Michael Matthews had tested positive for COVID. Jumbo-Visma left, you guys stayed. Why?
Basically, we're just following the rules that we agreed upon with the UCI, with the organisation before we come. The protocol that we follow is stage races. It's basically the decision that we made.
So there was never a moment this morning where you sort of considered, there wasn't an hour or two before the start where you considered maybe leaving?
No, I think we're confident in the way we're working inside our bubble with the distancing, and we isolated Michael, and the team will be regularly tested. So we'll, as I said, just follow the protocols agreed on, and
And from a technical point of view, there have been a lot of stages already that would have been kind of stages for Michael, but he also had a team role here. What will you miss? What are you losing in Michael? Certainly thinking about Wilco's GC.
Yeah, I mean, Michael's a great all-rounder, and we will miss him. There was opportunities to pick up stage results or possible stage wins with him here. Today would have been also a nice day for Michael. So it's unfortunate we miss him. He's also a strong rider we can use in that. For the GC support as well, so obviously to target the GC overall, missing a rider is not ideal, but we just carry on and keep our focus on what we can control. So.
That was Luke Roberts, and another sports director we spoke to at the finish was Max Chiandri. We heard briefly from him at the start. Obviously, he was, like many people, applauding Peter Sagan's victory, but he echoed as well some of the things that we heard from Jos van Emden last night about the arrangements here, and at the same time paid sort of tribute to Sunweb and Jumbo-Visma, who they've shared hotels with the last three nights, having noted, you know, that they were sort of exemplary in what they were trying to do and how they were trying to manage things. So quite interesting from Max Chiandri here, the Movistar sports director.
We had two teams in our hotel, you know, so that's like 3 days in the same hotel with Jumbo and Sunweb. We had five teams in the first hotel with a wedding the second day we're there in Sicily. And actually, I have to say that Jumbo and both Sunweb were very strict to rules, you know, I mean, very strict to hygiene and glove. I saw the Swannies really taking suitcases with gloves, so, I mean, teams are doing the best effort. Everybody wants to be here and race the race. That's what's happening, and we can't really control. I think this is good. The finishes, the starts are good. I think the only things, hotels, they could have been like single hotels. You can't really plan. What can you plan? Weather, we don't know. It's COVID, we don't know. And it just shows you today that there's probably not even a leader. I mean, okay, Quickstep are having the jersey, but I think everybody's just like, let's do something, you know. It can be not tomorrow, you know. You know, 1,600 meter stage, Tirreno stage, good, and boom, explodes. You know, it's pretty worried because first of all, after the rest days, I've been, you know, rest days are always killer. A lot of stuff can happen, so we have to take day by day and keep things going. And
the cycling podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the cycling podcast since 2016 at the Giro d'Italia. If you'd
2016.
Like 2016, long time ago.
Well, I've been droning on about this in the car, but Rich, tomorrow the first Grand Tour stage I've missed since Israel 2018.
Yeah,
and I think it's about the, well, it'll be the fourth Grand Tour stage I've missed since 2015.
Wow, amazing.
Anyway, sorry.
I wonder if there'll be a different atmosphere there.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be very somber.
I wonder
tomorrow
if your
morning.
Absence will be marked.
It'll be very
maybe with
somber.
Some ceremony at the start. If you'd like 25% off all your Science and Sport products, go to scienceandsport.com. And do you know the code in Italian?
No, but I promised Stephen Moon, who is our very
chief
kind,
executive
very
of
kind
Science
generous
and Sport.
Sponsor, chief executive of Science and Sport, that by the time we get to 2,000 episodes, I will have this nailed.
Well, that's great. That's good incentive for Science and Sport to carry on supporting us. Thank you in advance for that, Science and Sport. The code is, can you do it in Italian? SISCP25.
What is it? 25.
SISCP25.
SISCP25.
There you go, for the Italian listeners out there. Well done, Daniel. You got there. I got there in the end. It's my greatest achievement of this Giro. Well, Daniel, as I've said repeatedly in this episode, an absolutely fantastic day's racing, overshadowed by the COVID news, unfortunately. But what a day's racing it was, and really that owed an awful lot, perhaps mostly, to one rider, Peter Sagan. And we were asked in our press conference episode last night by a listener whether Sagan's waning powers could be traced back to a crash he suffered a couple of years ago. And I think we said that if there has been a waning of the powers, it's pretty marginal. He's still an exceptional bike rider. His consistency is incredible. He's looked to be in great form at this Giro, and he proved it today. He rode from the front. He was attacking. He was aggressive all day. You know, it was a tough day, really hard climbs, not a lot of altitude gain in the climbs, but 1,600 metres, I think, Max Chiandri said there was today. But it was a tour de force by Sagan today.
Well, it was a tour de force, but it felt like we were at the Tirreno Adriatico, because we've seen Sagan do this kind of thing in similar weather, on similar terrain, similar roads. The Tirreno often goes up these muri, these very steep ramps in the Abruzzo and the Marche. And I thought it'd be too hard for Sagan. I mean, we had a bit of a debate around the breakfast table today, didn't
well,
we?
My
and
tip was
night.
Michael Matthews well, for they, today, well, before we heard the news.
But the divergence of opinions was huge. Andrea, Italian colleague who knows a lot about cycling, rides a bike, had ridden the course. He was convinced it was going to be some form of bunch sprint. and maybe with Sagan winning, I thought it was going to be a GC day. I'd listened to various people talk about, you know, the last sort of 50, 60 kilometres of this stage, looked at the gradients, and I thought a lot could happen. And it did, but, you know, there were so many things to admire in Sagan's performance. I mean, as we heard James Knox talk about, the way he and Ganna in particular resisted the return of the peloton from behind. And, you know, that was early in the stage that the peloton looked as though the peloton had him almost within touching distance, and the gap just stayed at 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and you know, it wasn't that they were letting up, it was just phenomenal riding.
Phenomenal. He was away with Ganna for a bit, and then there was a sort of running joke between Ganna and Sagan. They were sort of chatting to each other in the break and laughing. I'm not sure what was going on there. Sagan was playing to some extent. You know, he was going off the front with Ganna, then he went off the front with Ben Swift. Ben Swift rode extremely well. You spoke to him at the start, Daniel. In fact, you know, he's been riding well here since Geraint Thomas had to pull out. Shall we hear from him now, Ben Swift?
Ben, a gnarly sort of up and down stage today. Judging by the way you've been climbing, it must be one, well, I imagine it's one you've been targeting and thinking about.
Yeah, definitely. I think today and the next 4 days are quite interesting. I worked really, really hard to be in my best climbing form to try and help G win the GC. I think, judging how the race would have gone, I'd had my work cut out and I'd had a good race. But hopefully now I can use that form to try and get something out of this race for myself. And, you know, I've been close in Grand Tours in the past, and try to finally get a Grand Tour stage win, it'd be brilliant. So it's a little bit tricky now with the way that the race is run, and no team is actually strong enough to really control it and take it on. A lot of the sprinter teams are split by GC and sprint. So, you know, you've almost got to be a little bit of luck on your side, whether it's the break or whether it comes to a finish. So I think you just got to see the options and take it as the race comes.
Based on past experience, when you have been climbing really well, does your sprint suffer, and by how much?
Normally when I'm climbing my best, I'm sprinting my best, especially because I sprint better in the smaller groups also. My plan here wasn't to do any sprinting, it was to work for G. And then once that changed, I was like, right, let's try and think about it, how I can best do my race. I won't do the big bunch sprints because I know realistically in the big bunch sprints, then I'm not going to be there. But the actual only big bunch sprint that we've done, I was nearly in the top three. So, but that wasn't the plan to do it. That was just trying to position Teo, and I found myself in position. I thought I'd just have a go. So I think as long as my legs are feeling good, I'm just going to try every opportunity.
With the legs you've got, I guess you hope the race goes as far as possible. But how worried are you this morning after the news of the positives overnight? And also just thoughts on the bubble and how it's been managed, how it's been maintained throughout the Giro.
No, it's definitely scary. I think with how it is in Europe and the world in general, there's a lot of cases becoming more and more. So I think the longer the season is going on, we're going to see more cases really and stuff. But all we can do, we can just try and protect ourselves as best as possible and hope for the best, and hope that we can make it to Milan. And because it's not just that, it's also the weather that's going to be coming in. But I think we're in good hands with the Giro organisation, and we just got to, yeah, it's down to them.
Are you starting to play back in your mind the conversations you've had in the peloton over the last few days? Were you close to Simon Yates? Are those kind of things coming to your head?
I think when you do see stuff like that, you do have a little think about it. But I think it's the bubble. Everybody's together anyway, and this is a strange virus, isn't it? And I think nobody's got any sort of idea. The more I learn about it, the less I understand about it. So
Ben Swift, interesting there, I think, just on his own condition. About you asked him about whether his sprinting powers were sort of blunted when he was in such exceptional shape that he's climbing very well. On Sunday he rode extremely well. He was up in that sort of group of GC riders. And, you know, after his efforts today, he still managed fourth on the stage, second in the sprint behind. And you said you thought it would be a GC day. It was, really. I mean, that group behind Sagan and McNulty, who held on for second, it's only 13 riders, you know, 13 of the strongest riders in the race.
Yeah, and we'll just go back to Sagan's performance. I was thinking, Rich, if you put together an anthology of Sagan's greatest hits, you might obviously go straight back to the monument wins, the Tour of Flanders win, which he it was the result of a solo attack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On the top of the Eau de Quaremont or over the top. And Paris-Roubaix, really, although he ended up with Sylvain Dillier, I think it was 54 kilometres really out.
He can do it, can't he?
54 kilometres from the finish that he sort of said goodbye to the other big hitters. But I think this was right up there, particularly in the circumstances, him sort of being written off. Although, and I think, you know, the way he spoke at the in his press conference at the finish line told me that, you know, this wasn't Sagan with a point to prove, and he didn't take any pleasure. He didn't spend any time sort of gloating over who had written him off, or he didn't sort of suggest that this was any kind of message. It was just Sagan doing what Sagan has been doing for, as we said yesterday, he's been doing for, you know, the last 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And, you know, if you go down and you look at his results over that period of time, you see the number of second places, and we see that as a failure. But all that really means is that he's been unfortunate enough to find, you know, one guy on the day who's been better than him.
He might. I said last night that he'll win Milan-San Remo when he's no longer a favourite to win Milan-San Remo, and I kind of stand by that, because I think, you know, a bunch sprint is always a lottery, and you don't get really any credit for finishing third, fourth. He must enjoy winning like that on his own. It appeared so. He can do that, and maybe he'll try to do that more often. Maybe that will become his thing.
I mean, I think there was always a high probability that he would move into and find excellent form in the Giro, because he's a guy who can obviously absorb massive loads, training loads. We've seen, you know, his powers of recovery in the Tour de France. We've seen back-to-back stages in the mountains when he's been in breaks. And, you know, some guys fold and crumble when they're overloaded with training and work, and Sagan is not that guy. And you know, I spoke to Elia Viviani this morning. I think we'll hear from him tomorrow about, you know, how you do get fitter you know, when you ride back-to-back Grand Tours, but your explosiveness goes slightly. And I think Sagan is probably very, very fit at the moment. He's in great condition, and you know, there are more opportunities for him. There's another opportunity in 3 days when the peloton will go over the little volcanic hills outside Padova, the Colli Euganei. And yeah, I think he'll have a fantastic second half of the Giro.
Well, yeah, I mean, his fitness is there to see, and it is notable how he just won with brute strength today. And I think also the point about the press conference is interesting, because a lot of riders in that position, he hasn't won for more than a year, and he is criticised, I suppose. If you were sensitive, you would say he was criticised or ridiculed slightly for going so close so often and not being able to convert that into a win. But if that bothers him, then he didn't show it at all in the press conference. He seemed very kind of sanguine about everything, really.
Yeah, we were sort of imagining the responses of certain other riders in similar circumstances if they hadn't won for however many 100 days it is that Sagan hadn't won.
Unrelated to that, and another news I meant to mention earlier, Mark Cavendish is coming out of retirement.
That was a low blow.
He's coming out of retirement tomorrow to ride Scalderpris. I meant to mention that earlier on. But he's not retired yet, but maybe Scalderpris will be his last race. Daniel's definitely not being drawn
on
that.
I'm not
going to
engage in this.
Anyway, Sagan,
I don't approve.
What a victory. What a performance. What a ride. And, I mean, there aren't many riders who can do that, I guess, are there? Any other stories from today, Daniel? I mean, I thought Pots of Evil was remarkable today. I mean, he's not far off, you know, the pink jersey, really. And I think today he fancied that, because he had his team work hard. They did a lot of damage in the race, which we haven't seen that an awful lot from NTT. And it was good to see that they have really rallied behind Pots of Evil. I can see him emerging as a sort of cult hero, because he looks so awkward on the bike. He's Tom Thumb. He's got this injury. He looks like a crab, doesn't he? He's got this injury. I shouldn't laugh about it because it's not funny. But he's overcoming significant kind of hurdles here, Pots of Evil. He crashed out the Tour. He had an awful... Well, he was hit by a car at the end of last year. He's really... Oh, yeah, he's showing me a picture of Tom Thumb. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Anyway, but he punctured at a bad moment in a slow kind of change, got back on eventually, and then went straight to the front and started tearing it to pieces. And the NTT work earlier on was clearly designed to set him up for a proper attack. And if that puncture hadn't happened, then who knows? I mean, Pozzovivo might have done more damage than Bilbao, who had a go. But those guys are all within sort of touching distance of the pink jersey if Almeida falters, which he didn't do today in the end.
And doesn't look remotely close to faltering at the moment until, you know, we get to the high mountains. If we get to the high mountains, we spoke to a couple more riders today about, well, just how cold it was 2 days ago at Roccarazzo and the prospect of descending in much colder temperatures. You know, there seems to be a real consensus in the peloton that, well, stages could be cancelled, shortened, and also with the further looming threat of the COVID positives. You know, quite a few riders today, and I was quite surprised about this, talked about the peloton racing as though it could be the last day, which, you know, we heard a lot in Paris-Nice earlier in the year. I think it would take something quite drastic and quite remarkable for... you know, for the Giro not to start tomorrow, for example. You know, we know that...
Your absence, and perhaps?
Well, we know that, you know, some web are being tested again tonight, but we heard... Well, we saw, didn't we, Rich, on the first... After the first rest day of the Tour de France, or on the Tuesday, wasn't it, when the results of the test carried out on the first rest day of the Tour de France, the atmosphere, particularly at the start of that day, but throughout the day, and it lasted about 24 hours, was very febrile. There was, you know, the journalists getting very excited about the developing situation, speculating about how far the race was going to go. And it was kind of, although we're a very, very reduced press pack here, it was kind of the same today, wasn't it? But that could easily, in a very short space of time, return to, you know, a quiet confidence that the Giro is going to make it, well, at least in the next rest day.
Well, that's absolutely right, because an illustration of that was at breakfast this morning when one minute we were, you know, preparing to leave for the stage, the next minute this news dropped about the test, and immediately the race is plunged into doubt. And you know, that could just dissipate over the next few days and we get back to some kind of normality. But there is a Paris-Nice sort of feeling about it. I think also with the wider context is that in Europe, things are getting more and more fraught, really, and the, you know, various places are closing down, and measures are being taken, and there could come a point, as there did at Paris-Nice, where it just seemed almost, I mean, and I think one or two of the writers talked about this as well, that they don't want to be participating in a race that a lot of people will think shouldn't be going on as well. I mean, there's that aspect to it as well. So it does have a sort of Paris-Nice feel about it, but the converse, the flip side of that is that, and it seems sort of almost obscene to relish in this, but the racing is amazing. I mean, at Paris-Nice, they race every day as if it was going to be the last day's racing for a long time, as it was. And here too, I think that will be the case. We saw it today. Just a rip snorter, as you would say.
Is it more or less precarious than our eatery last night?
Was very precarious.
Trabocco. We ate in the middle of a raging Adriatic last night.
The trabocchi are these very rickety-looking structures
fishermen's
built in
huts.
The sea.
Yeah.
Fishermen's huts, like little jetties with these, huts that look like they're falling down in the sea, and they're dotted along the coastline there. You said just for about 10 kilometres.
That area particularly where we were, just south of Chieti, is famous for them. So much so it's called the Costa dei Trabocchi. But they do exist, well, they certainly did exist in Molise and down in Puglia as well. It's a kind of tradition of this coast.
I have to say, it was an experience.
I ate more fish in the space of an hour and a half than I think I'd eaten for the previous 30-odd years.
And it was delicious. The food was delicious. It was the sort of place, no menu, just, you know, take what you're given. The food was excellent. The wine was excellent.
We had a nice white wine, a pecorino. Most people will be familiar with pecorino. It's a cheese. It's a kind of hipster alternative.
Pecorino ice cream in Sicily. Yeah,
it's a sort of hipster alternative to Parmesan. Pecorino better on spicy food than Parmesan. You should never have Parmesan on spicy food, but pecorino you can. But pecorino is also a great variety. Why does it have the same name? Loads of different theories. So pecorino is sheep's cheese, right? And one theory, why is it called pecorino? It's that the shepherds used to drink this kind of rough white wine, and it hence got the name pecorino. Others say the shape of the bunch of grapes looks like a sheep's head. What else is that? It flourishes at around the same times that the sheep are taken out to pasture. All sorts of theories, Rich. All sorts.
Wow. There's one interview we haven't played yet, which we're going to play. Brandon McNulty, he wrote excellently today, clipped off the front of the bunch. I thought he might get Sagan back. The gap, I haven't really sort of explained this very well, but Sagan had such a small gap the whole time. You know, it was 20 to 30 seconds, and McNulty went off the front, and it was down to about 20, but he couldn't close it any further. And well, great ride by him, and he is riding pretty well overall as well. He's up there. He moved up to 13th on GC today, up from 18th. So a good day for him. She mentioned Theo Gegenhardt as well, moved up three places to 14th. And you spoke to Brandon McNulty at the finish.
Yeah, with, I don't even know, 30K. I thought my race is done. I got a flat on the one of those steep climbs, and then the cars weren't close, so I had to stop for a while and then just, you know, send it down the descent in the wet through the cars and back on. And then, yeah, every climb I thought it was gonna be my last one until the final one, and then I knew it was a flat running and there were no teams, so I knew if I could get a jump on them, I could probably hold it off on the flats through the finish. And yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, the stage win would have been nice with some time, and then also second place on the stage is still incredible. Yeah, now it's like every day is possibly the last day, so just all in every day. It was obvious everyone felt that because it was a hard day.
That was Brandon McNulty riding a very good Giro d'Italia. We need to wrap up for tonight, don't we? Our last night on the Giro, Daniel.
Yeah, and we're near Bologna, so what could be on the menu tonight? Could be lasagna, could be could be cannelloni. Bologna, of course, we...
Spaghetti bolognese?
Maybe. maybe. Of course, we did... Well, the Giro started in Bologna last year, the Grande Partenza. We learned then that this city is known as La Grassa, the fat one, because of its rich culinary tradition. So let's go and immerse ourselves in that tradition
now,
Rich.
Let's go and do that. Last night, we celebrated, of course, our 1,000th episode. This is our 1,002nd episode, because today we released an episode of Kilometre Zero, and it was done by you, Daniel. What was it? I mean, I have listened.
It was about the Apennines.
And it was fantastic. So that is Kilometre Zero today, powered by Zwift. I also said a few thank yous on Twitter to people who are involved in the podcast, our presenters and our producers. I omitted two very important people, Jonathan Rowe, who is responsible for the kind of look of the podcast. All these beautiful designs on social media are done by Jonathan, and much else besides. He produces some shows as well. So thank you very much, Jonathan. We really wouldn't have made it to 1,000 episodes without you. And David Luxton, who also falls into the same category. We wouldn't have made it to 1,000 episodes without David Luxton looking after all the kind of business side of the podcast. So thank you to both of you. Thank you, Daniel, for your company over the last 10 days. Our coverage does carry on. This is the grandest tour, don't forget. Daniel's off to the Vuelta. I'm off to the Tour of Flanders, I think, if I can get there. And we'll carry on with our rotating cast of presenters. Lizzie Banks, Francois Tomazo, and Ian Boswell are going to be joining Lionel and me and Daniel when he can dial in. So that'd be quite exciting, I think. Looking forward to that. Before we go, quick quick thank you to some friends of the podcast. Thank you very much if you've signed up as a friend of the podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. If you want to us to carry on to 2,000 episodes, please sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. I must say thanks to Julian Allen, who requested on Twitter that I give him a thank you. So thank you, Julian. Thank you also to Daniel Russell, James Winters, Oliver Smith, Hugh Winkler, Stanley McDonald, Noel Costello, Ian Campbell, and Barry King.
And to Stephen Fortune, James Biggs, Ben Pittman, Ben McLand, Mr. Lee Townend, Sergio Barbera, and Patrick Slater.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Rich.